Let's talk some Cleveland Browns football with John Telich on this week's Budweiser's From the Sidelines, presented by North Ridgeville Convenient Sunoco on Center Ridge and Barton Roads. JT, y'all rested up after the bye week?
Yeah, it was really good to kind of have two Sundays straight where there was no Browns drama, if you will, and you had the Monday night game, so they were off the day before, and then the Browns being off last Sunday. So kind of nice to just kind of peel back the layers of just chill and enjoy two Sundays in a row where you didn't have the drama that you normally have on a Sunday with the Brownies playing.
Yeah, I think a lot of folks, their blood pressure is very, very thankful for that. But back to reality this Sunday as the Browns will be in Miami to take on the Dolphins. A bit of a mystery team this year's Miami Dolphins. We'll circle back around to them before we get out of here. But for the Browns, a couple of key guys banged up heading into that bye week. Wyatt Teller has dealt with some injuries. Denzel Ward just can't seem to get out of that concussion protocol. David Njoku's missed some time. So what's kind of the overall, you know, health status of this team heading into the second half of the year?
Well, I think they were a little conservative on Wyatt Teller, so why he missed so much time, because it was a similar injury to what he had before with that calf injury. But I think, you know, he returned to the practice field on Monday, and so I would assume as this week goes on, he'll probably get the green light. Denzel, they're not saying he was on the practice field on Monday, but they have not said whether or not he's a green light. But I would assume that's a pretty good sign that he was out there. We'll see how the week ramps up. David Njoku said he was going to play. Now, that's David Njoku. That may not be, you know, the training staff or the Browns hierarchy. So we'll see how that goes. They certainly could use him because they just had Harrison Bryant and Farrell Brown at their disposal. And then JLK, we'll see how that goes as well, but I would assume as the week goes on, they'll probably get good news on his front. So a lot of guys potentially being back, and they'll need them all because, as you mentioned, it's the Fins, and they're quite a different team this year, the way they're set up, having won three straight. Their second time this season, they won three straight games.
And as the Browns get ready for the second half of this season and try to make that playoff push and try to climb back into the AFC North race, which gets tougher with Baltimore continuing to look better and better each week, they're going to need their top guys to continue to step up. And I think they did in the first half. And you sent me some interesting numbers as far as the grades are concerned for Myles Garrett defensively and then Joel Bitonio offensively, two of the top guys in the league this season.
Yeah, they really have been special. I think Joel has just been so consistent with his play. He might have had one game where he was somewhat of a not to his standards, but I think by and large, he's been the rock there on the offensive line. They lost Teller for several games, and of course Conklin was coming back, and then I know the guy playing to the left of him, Jedrick, has been kind of up and down, so he's been a concern. But Joel has always been tops. And offensive players, he's right there at the top, 91.3. And then Miles is number one of the defensive players at 92.9. And I think in the most recent game, Rocco, probably not a smart move to have that young tackle out there alone with the occasional chip to help him out. But being out there on alone against someone of the caliber of Miles, because Miles did have a very good game, disruptive game, as we've been known to see from number 95 in his career.
Is that game, and let's talk about that Bengals game quickly here, JT. That something that these Browns can build on moving forward, especially with Kevin Stefanski? I think he had gotten a lot of flack over the course of the first eight games, and I think getting that win over Cincinnati was just huge momentum-wise and just in terms of them looking really dominant over a team that, you know, you weren't necessarily expected to dominate, but yet they did, and I think that bodes really well for them.
I think he really had a good game calling the plays, and I know there's always the talk about people saying it's too much to handle on any given Sunday or Monday night, being the head coach and also being the play caller. But I thought he schemed very well. He had several instances where, you know, Amari Cooper wide open. He used Kareem Hunt in the passing game maybe a little bit more than what we have seen. And, of course, Nick being the great running back that Nick Chubb is. So I thought he had a good game, and the defense came off of a pretty solid performance against Baltimore, and then they just built on that. And I don't know why the Browns defense is the kryptonite for Joe Burrow, but I would imagine you just say, let's keep it that way, because he just had no answers for them. And then you saw what the Bengals did this past week when they just exploded on the offensive side. So I'm sure a lot of Bengals fans are going, where in the heck was that in the past? So Kevin's got some things to build on, and certainly their odds for getting to the playoffs are a bit complicated and steep. But it's nice to know that you've had a week to self-evaluate and get back on the practice field after you had a real solid performance with many of your key players missing. So I think they have to have a real good sense of where they stand this week preparing for Miami.
John Telich, our guest on this morning's Budweiser's From the Sidelines, again presented by North Ridgeville Convenience Sunoco on Center Ridge and Barton Roads. Browns trying to make that second half a playoff push. They'll get it started in Miami this Sunday against the Dolphins. JT, I think the biggest marquee event of the second half of the season will be the return of Deshaun Watson to the field. Is he back at practice already? Is he not back? I forget exactly when he's able to come back.
Well, actually, he can be practicing starting next Monday, being kind of like a recap day, Rocco. I would assume your first real practice where he's doing substantial stuff will be a week from Wednesday when they're preparing for the next game, and that would be the game against the Buffalo Bills. So he will be able to practice for those couple of weeks, and then he should be ready to play against his former team, the Texans, in that early December contest. So it's all unless we hear something that's like out of left field, kind of a ruling from the league. Apparently he's done all that's been required. He's stayed away from the facility. Now that he's been back, he's taking in meetings and all of that he's able to take in. Certainly can't practice, but next week they will turn him loose, if you will, and we'll see how much practice he gets in within the span of a normal practice session, with the mind's eye knowing that they still have to get Jacoby ready to play both the Bills and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
So with three games before Watson comes back, is there a number in your mind, JT, that the Browns need to get to as far as wins go before Watson comes back to have a realistic shot at the postseason? Or is there just such a level of unknown with what Watson will look like when he comes back to where you can't even really do that?
I think you really hit the last part correct. We just don't know. Saw him in the preseason, and he didn't look that good.
Yeah.
But again, it could be everything from the scope of he has a struggling first game down against the Texans, and then he comes on like gangbusters. But I would suspect, and things might be a little bit better for the Browns moving forward with the news out of Buffalo, the big concerns they have with Josh Allen and is that ulnar ligament in his right elbow, a big concern, I would assume. And so we know they're taking on Tua. That's 100%, but we're not sure who they will face against the Buffalo Bills if it's real bad news for Josh Allen. And then you have Tom Brady, who showed in this past weekend that he still has it as far as comebacks are concerned. So I would say they've got to be at five. You know, they have to be at five wins then to be able to maybe have a potential for playing postseason football if Deshaun comes back and looks like he did prior to the 2021 season. And, he was real good prior to that. And then, of course, he had to sit out the whole year last season. And then, of course, he's sitting out a good chunk of this year. So we'll see. But I think if they're at 5-6, that means they have to win two of the next three. And when you look at the schedule, that maybe early in the year it didn't seem as difficult, but the Dolphins are 6-3, and their quarterback is playing real good football.
Talking Browns football with John Telich this morning. JT, quickly before we do get into that matchup with the Dolphins on Sunday, you sent me, I'll call these the JT Awards, as you had had some names kind of circled. So I'll let you kind of go through here. You had, an MVP, newcomer, and some other names in here as well.
Well, definitely the MVP for the Browns this year has to be Nick Chubb. I mean, he's just elite as it comes. He's been there every game. You could have also said maybe Miles would be MVP caliber, but he did miss a game, and that game being missed was at his own doing, if you will. He is the reason why he missed that game because, you know, he had the accident in his Porsche. So I would say your MVP this year is Nick Chubb. And let's give Jacoby Brissett some consideration, but certainly is not the MVP. But I think he's played as well as they could have expected for a career backup quarterback to play. But Chubb, far and away being your MVP, and even you don't even have to ask me. I believe Derrick Henry was asked about the top players in the league at his position. And Derrick Henry sang the praises of Nick Chubb. And I know that's not an easy thing for a guy from Alabama to do. From the Georgia Bulldogs, but he did. So I would give him that. Your Lifetime Achievement Award is Joel Bitonio. You certainly want this guy, such a classy guy, such a great individual, and Pro Bowl after Pro Bowl after Pro Bowl, and this year is no exception. So I'm giving him the the Irving R. Levine Lifetime Achievement Award that they give out at the Oscars every year. So he gets my Lifetime Achievement Award. Biggest nightmare. And it has to do a lot with not just his football ability, but what he likes to do on Halloween, both with his front lawn and also how he dressed to go to the Bengals game. You've got to give your biggest nightmare award to Myles Garrett. And the best newcomer, I'd go with Ethan Posick, the backup center who's played this year and is getting a lot of praise for how well he's played. Bill Callahan certainly has to figure into that equation, being a great offensive line coach. And then Emerson has played great at a very good football as a young defensive back. And so I think those guys have been your best newcomers so far. Now, the kicker certainly had an opportunity, but he's had a couple of misses, but he'd be in consideration as well. I mean, just on the strength alone of what he did in week one when he won the game for the Browns with that clutch field goal try that he had late in the contest. So those are so maybe I could call them the Razzies or the JTs or whatever, but those are some of my nods to the great play that we've seen from some guys this year.
We'll have to circle back around to these JTs in about 8 weeks or so and see how these will hold up by the end of the season. So no disagreements from me so far in the first half of the year. So Browns in Miami on Sunday to take on the Dolphins. As we've talked about, kind of an up and down Miami team. Of course, they had that whole big episode with Tua Tagovailoa earlier this year with the scary incident on national TV. They got really a lot of flack for that and deservedly so. But it's still a very good Dolphins team. A lot of weapons offensively, of course, bringing in Tyreek Hill over the offseason. So how do the Browns go down there and get a win?
Well, Tua is playing great football. He's had two straight games, 300-plus yards, three touchdowns, and no turnovers. And I believe that is a first in the history of the Miami Dolphins. Wow. And Dan Marino, as we all know, used to play for them. So that's pretty impressive. Tua, rating of 115.9. He's tops in QBR, tops in yards per attempt. And what he did in that most recent game against the Bears that I mentioned, he had 15 targets to his two top receivers in Tyreek Hill, who's at 1,100 yards already this year. And he had 15 targets between the two of those guys, and there were 12 completions. And so he was really efficient. So we'll see what the Browns defense will be able to do against him. And then, you know, the Browns offense is going to take on a defense that, at least let me give this stat to you, but also take into account the fact that they picked up Bradley Chubb. So I do want to qualify, but their defense has given up 300 yards passing four different times this year. And so it's an opportunity for the Browns passing game to be successful down in Miami. But again, I do want to qualify that by saying that, you know, Bradley Chubb's only a very, very recent addition to their team. He made an immediate impact for them getting on the field against the Bears. And they also had Jeff Wilson come in and play, got 50 yards running the football as he was like kind of alternating snaps with Mostert. So there's a lot of things that they're doing well. And of course, Mike McDaniel, a rookie coach, has done a pretty darn good job. He, along with some other rookie coaches this year, the guy with the New York Giants, you know, former offensive coordinator, has done a great job. So there's a bunch of young coaches that are having pretty good years, and we can just go back 3 years in Browns history when they had a rookie coach who ended up being the NFL Coach of the Year. So I think Tua's had some pretty good leadership from Mike McDaniels. And the guy's also got a great sense of humor. I don't know if you heard his quote. They asked him about trying to stop Justin Fields, who had a great day offensively. There was a lot of scoring in that game and running the football quite a bit. And he said something to Justin when Justin went, you know, finished a run on the sidelines over by on the Miami side. And he just said, "I just told him to stop, you know, stop scrambling and running. And he just won't listen to me. What the heck is wrong with him?" So McDaniel's got a great sense of humor and a lot of cheers down there in Miami. Their team is 6-3, and they have a team coming from the northern climate, if you will, playing a game on a potential super warm day in Miami. That's never an easy game for a team coming from the north to play down there in that humidity.
Yeah, we always talk about it being the other way around, right? When the teams from Florida or California have to come into the cold, but it can be tough the other way around too when you go from, you know, crisp and chilly into a blazing hot South Beach. So it'll certainly be a tough task for the Browns in Miami, taking on the 6-3 Dolphins. Again, the Browns at 3-5, coming off the bye week and need a win to start this second half of playoff push. All right, JT, before I let you go, we got to talk some high school football. And look, before we get into regional semifinal action, you had perhaps the best regional quarterfinal game in history. Heck, maybe the best high school football game in OHSAA history. Cleveland Heights and St. Ignatius. How about those Wildcats down 42-14 at the half, and they come back and win the dang thing, JT? How the heck did that happen?
Rocco, it was astonishing. I remember being there at halftime and watching the Ignatius punter work on some coffin corner kicks to try to, you know, put the ball out on like the 10-yard line or inside the 10. And all I could think of was, if this young man sees the field in the second half, that means Ignatius is not really going to have an opportunity to get back into this game and have a chance at winning it. But not only did we not see him for the first four possessions that Ignatius had the football, they had the ball, they scored, then they made three more stops and scored touchdowns in such a swift fashion that there was like 10 minutes to go in the game when St. Ignatius tied it at 42-all. Bottom line is, they were able to score late to get within 1 point of Cleveland Heights, who did get a go-ahead touchdown from Darian Fair. But Ignatius elected, and that, of course, is the legend Chuck Kyle, with the potential of that being his last game ever. He proceeded to swing for the fences and gambled on his kids, and they went for two, and it was successful. It was really a thrilling game to watch. I felt a real bad for the kids on Cleveland Heights because they were playing as hard as they could, and Ignatius just seemed to have that mojo and it was working for them. Great high school game, and congratulations to Coach Kyle, but now potentially his last game as coach of the St. Ignatius Wildcats could come at the hands of the arch rival Ed's Eagles, who beat them rather handily earlier this season. They've got the rematch on Friday night at Euclid Community Stadium. So I'm excited to see that game. That's going to be quite the holy war for all the marbles, if you will.
Yes, it will. There's a holy war down in Summit County again, too, this week, is there not, with Hoban and St. V meeting up again? Yeah. So that'll be a lot of fun. I'll plug our games on WEOL, and I'm sure you're well aware of some of these. Avon and Olmsted Falls, a rematch from the regular season. That should be a good one. Another regular season rematch from the GCC, Medina and Menor. That one will be at Twinsburg on Friday night. We'll have that on stream, too. And then Saturday, we have a pair of games as well. Columbia taking on Ashland Crestview from Medina, and then we'll have Elyria Catholic and Glenville from North Ridgeville. So some other good games on the ledger as well.
There really are. You have Hudson taking on the Beavers of Painesville Riverside. Now Hudson's undefeated, and Riverside just has that one loss to the Mentor Cards early in the season. And then here's another rematch, and this is Kenston Chardon. I was at that game earlier in the season when Kenston hosted the Chardon Hilltoppers. And the Hilltoppers were coming off that loss that they had, their first loss in quite a while, to Painesville Riverside. So they were kind of a smarting from that, if you will. And Kenston could not keep up with Chardon, and Chardon did win that. And so we'll see what happens on this rematch. So there's a lot of great third-round games in the regionals, and really excited to see how some of these turn out.
It's getting down to the nitty-gritty, and of course, Friday and Saturday action, football all weekend long. It's the best time of the year, and of course, my basketball season gets underway soon, but we're not here to talk about that. That's another conversation for another day.
Yeah.
So, JT, thank you for the time. As always, my friend, I appreciate it. Again, Browns in Miami taking on the Dolphins this Sunday, 1 o'clock kickoff there, so we'll talk about it some more next week. JT, thank you again for the time. Good sir, have a great rest of your week, and we'll catch up some more next Thursday.
I look forward to it, Rocco. Hope you guys all have a great week. Talk to you then.